Yeah, I mean, this is a good game to determine if you have like a learning disability or not. Because you're going to be able to like, wait, I don't understand this. And like someone else will be like, no, this means this, this means that. You're not paying attention. I'm like, no, I just don't understand the map. Because it's just like, it's like, well, all the colors mean these things. I'm like, what are those? What does it mean? Like, I don't know.
Warning, the following podcast is intended for immature dads only. Listener discretion is advised. This is Dad's Game Review, the most casual hardcore gamers around. Reviews and news from every platform. We waste our time so you don't have to.
What's up, kids? Welcome to another episode of Dad's Game Review. I'm back. Hopefully you can all hear me now.
Hey, Paul. Welcome back.
Hey, John. That was a great discussion we had last week. And
you guys missed out. I mean, I'm not joking. You missed out on a really solid episode of Dad's Game. And now we're going to watch Paul and I just try to, like, I don't know, just stuff the tuna back into the can.
Yeah, exactly.
So just push the noodle back uphill. As we try to replace lightning in a bottle.
Right, pretty much, because my setup is not working properly, and 87 emails back and forth with the company that makes the software that makes the magic happen doesn't seem to be enough.
Yeah, let's not name the software you're using on the show, but no. Big props to them for working with Paul, and, you know.
I think I even tweeted. Or X'd, whatever. Yeah. I don't know if you saw that. Thanks to them for doing all the work. And
you know, there's lots of elements that go on when you're troubleshooting an audio rig. It was nice of them for them to email you back and forth, especially because you wrote like hugs and kisses and love at the end of your letters. You inadvertently called them mom at one point, and they still answered your emails. So
right. Yeah. Nice. You know, you know, that's just what I do. I mean, nobody wants that love.
P.S. I hope you're doing okay. I miss you so much. Love, Paul.
I did offer to buy them lunch, but they were kind of like, no need.
Well, I mean, technically it is their job. And so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, where are we at? Alone in the Dark. I guess we're going to try and recreate the magic that happened last week.
Wow, what's this new game we're playing, Paul? Alone in the Dark, a new remake?
Alone in the Dark is a 1992 remake that I totally didn't pull up the Wikipedia. I'm going to pretend like I didn't. Is a 1992 remake from back in the day. I think, what did you play it on, DOS?
I played it on my Performa 833, 835 or something like that.
Wow.
I played it on my Macintosh running in Mac OS 7.5. And it was very, very blocky. This was 3D polygon graphics pre-Tomb Raider. So it was just like each person was like 7 polygons. And it was just very, very like basic, but all the backgrounds were pre-rendered. It's kind of like what Resident Evil used to do, where like the backgrounds would look amazing, but the characters would be like super blocky and janky looking.
Yeah, they, totally. The characters playing are famous. So it was, what's his name from Stranger Things? Surprise, he plays a cop again. it's up in the 1930s L.A. noir. You know, the only thing missing from the beginning cut of this, I think I said this last week, was the L.A. noir. You know, the guy sitting at his desk narrating to himself, you know, she came walking in like a tall drink of water I needed. I barely had my bourbon.
But yeah,
but she had something to say, and I was all ears. You know, just
I barely broke off the snifter of my bourbon, but she'd already sniffed a case for me to solve. David Harbour from...
So it was very 30s. You know, they didn't include the language from the time. There are certain games, I think we talked about this last week as well, too, was that like how Mafia 3 didn't hold back with the N-word or describing black people from the time, or African-American, sorry, of the time. 30s was way worse language-wise, but they included none of that. I'm not saying I was looking for it, John. I wasn't looking for awkwardness in my video games. It was just that they used modern words in the dialogue. And it was like, wait, they didn't say that in the 30s. They used to say, hey, darky, you know?
Yes. Oh, gosh. Oh, this is the episode that gets us banned. But no, it wasn't that bad. But there, like, I think some like the psychological terminology was a little bit more up to date, where it was just like, oh, yes, she has a mental health issue. Yeah. Not like, she's a loony bin, you see? She's a loony bird. Yeah.
She's loony, you see? I tell ya.
No, a whole bunch of African Americans hanging out inside of that building.
But as far as the game goes, I wasn't impressed. I mean, the puzzles were just way.
Let's back up. Let's back up. So, before David Harbour plays the private investigator that Paul's talking about, Edward Carnby. Yes. Carnby and Emily Hartwood is the other character. That's Jodie Comer. I said last time she's the she's Uma Thurman Light.
Yeah.
She's the Costco Uma Thurman.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. She's great. And so they're the original characters from the original 1992 Alone in the Dark game.
Right.
They go to the Dorsetto Mansion, which was in the original game. Jodie Comer's character is looking for her uncle. Her uncle is crazy. He has found a talisman that allows him to basically transport to different places in different worlds. And this has caused a problem, kind of like Hellraiser, where you have this power, but there's unexpected consequences that's like causing like the mansion to shift into different times and spaces, like where the rooms will just start melting.
Yeah.
You'll be like, oh, let me just go to the bathroom. It's like, ah, demon!
Like Salvatore Dali, like just this.
There's so many melting rooms.
Oh, it just keeps, and you go back and forth with no effect whatsoever on your psyche. You're just like, oh, well, that's different, you know?
Yeah. The voice acting in this game, I mean, the performances are fine, but like they are uneven. Like you'll have like some people like David Harbour and Jodie Comer are so understated in their performances. It's just like, so where were you? I didn't see you. I couldn't see you. I didn't know where you were. And I'm just looking for my uncle. And I'm just trying to find, and it's just like there's a scene where she steps into a room and it transports her into like basically like New Orleans.
Right.
And it's like there's like monsters everywhere. And she's like covered in blood, and then she enters back into like the sanitarium, and it's like, I'm the head of the sanitarium. And she's talking to him, and she's just covered in blood.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, you look a little stressed. Here's a little bit of here's a bit of an old fashioned. I know you like it. She's like, thank you so much.
Yeah, yeah. We can't avoid the fact that your health is whiskey. Whenever you need to freshen up, you're just gonna take a swig and your health comes back. You know, in the past, I've always taken a swig of whiskey, but it's never really improved my health. But hey, you know, this is the 30s.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you could take a flask in your back for the boozer on the go. Mm-hmm.
It kind of was reminiscent of like old, like the original BioShock. In terms of sort of the style, obviously era is different. BioShock is late 50s, and this is 1930s.
Right.
With that being said, there's this, there's, I mean, I just love all like the props and all the little old timey details.
Yeah.
But the other thing that like this game does, and I said this to you last time in the amazing recorded episode that you'll never hear, is that this game is the best tobacco ad in the last 60 years. And because there's a scene where she's like smoking these cigarettes and there's like another lady. He's like, what are those? Is that Perique? And it's like, yes, it's Perique. It's a New Orleans tobacco, a Louisiana tobacco that's soaked in whiskey and everything. And it's just really soaked in whiskey. Neat. And it's like a real thing. It's one of the United States' earliest exports.
That's crazy. It's like, let's take this unhealthy thing and make it more unhealthy.
And now, like, I didn't finish the game. Maybe she dies of, like, lung cancer at the end. And it's just like, see, this is why I can't do this. But in the early game, it's very, it's kind of romanticized. And it's like, she's smoking something that's kind of out of time and out of place. And it's just like, well, you know, it's unique to me. And just, you know, it just makes me kind of cool. And it's like, it's she's a hipster. She's basically a hipster.
Yeah, caught not in her own time period. That's all it is.
And a spinster, because she's like 28.
Yeah.
And
I have to say, though, that I was playing along, and I was like, I like puzzles. I'll play this game. And I just kept going and going and playing the game. But it was very puzzle heavy. Very puzzle heavy. So you kind of get the gist of the talisman little disc thing that you carry around with you, and you start figuring out numbers from letters that you've read. Don't forget, it's Uncle Jared's birthday plus two pinky fingers, and blah, 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 and you just and you just gotta figure it out. You only have to guess the first two numbers, because you could always just run through the last third number and wait till it clicks open.
That's right. Just that third one's a freebie.
Yeah, you just need help with the first two. And that worked with the symbols that you had to get. And it was like, oh. And the funny thing is, he would comment to himself, too, like, oh, I guess I need to find the key. You know? Like, really?
Oh, yeah. And you can pick.
Because the locked door didn't trip me up. I was wondering what I had to do next.
Yeah, and you can pick the character you want to play. So Paul played the dude, and I played the girl, because that's what I do. And when she can't have the key, like, it's like she's whining. She's like, I don't know where the key is. It's just it's not that bad, but it's like, I can't find the key. And it's just like, it's like I'm talking to my wife. And I'm like, no, honey, it's the boy, we're not doing the boiler room puzzle right now. We don't have all the pieces for that one.
Right.
Stop looking. You're going to burn yourself.
No, you can't duck under the steam.
No, it's not. No, you can't. No, don't dash into it.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
Did you try to go through the steam?
I did. Yeah. I tried to dash through it. I tried to go through it. I was like, well, there's got to be a spot. Steam is steam, but, you know, being a homeowner, you get to know a lot of things about a lot of things.
Yeah.
Unless you're super close to a steam coming out of a pipe, it's not going to burn you or prevent you from going around it.
I'm going to sound like a real jerk when I say this, but I'm like, I'm playing a survival horror game. I'm trying to survive. I'm not getting close to that steam.
But the thing that confused me was that, you know, he always comments to himself, but he just kept, you know, I think it would have been better if the comment only came once. Like, every time I was by the steam, he kept saying, I got to find the valve. Yeah, I know. I know we need to find the valve. But it was confusing between the tiles on the side of the boiler. Which one was the puzzle? It was the tiles, or do I have to find did the tiles open up the steam, let it go, or did I still have to find a valve?
You had to find both. You had to find the valve, which was in the wine cellar, but you had to get a key to get into the wine cellar. And then the pieces, there was two different pieces that you had to add to the, like, the puzzle on the thing. It just,
I was not happy. So I didn't like it because it was very puzzle heavy, but I was like, I like puzzles. It was almost like when I went to work for FedEx, because one of the questions on the thing was like, are you good with people? And I was like, I like people.
Yeah.
And you think you do until you meet everybody.
Yeah.
And then so I started this game the same way. I was like, I like puzzles. I like puzzle games. And then you find yourself like, I'm so tired of puzzles. I just never thought I would ever say that.
It's like, oh, you like soup? Here's some cricket thorax soup. Still like soup?
Oh, my God. I couldn't after a while. And I was just like, okay. I was like, I'm done. And I used the talisman to go outside to the City of the Dead, which is just the cemetery in Louisiana. And I came across all sorts of beasts, including the skeletons that put your head under their arm like some kind of older brother. Smell it? Smell it? You know, that's his thing.
Yes.
I didn't like the controls because you constantly were, you were cornered more times than not.
Are we just doing the good and bad and ugly right now, Paul?
Oh, maybe. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's just do it.
The good was that the graphics were pretty good. I have to admit, the graphics were great. What was they did put a lot of attention and detail.
Yeah, I like the graphics too. I love all the props, like I said, and I thought the puzzles were fine. They're good in a way that I felt like they weren't too hard.
But yeah.
Every time I did a puzzle, it solved before I had solved it. I was like, oh, I got it.
Okay. Oh yeah. Of course I got it.
Thankfully the game tells you you solved the puzzle, because if it didn't, you'd be like, I'd be there all night.
Right.
For me, I mentioned this a little bit, but like the voice acting is really inconsistent. You've got like, you know, the mains play a very understated performance. It's just like, I can't find the key. And then there's other people like the uncle where it's like, oh my, I can't believe what horrors I'm seeing. And it's just like, pick a lane, buddy. You know?
Which one are we going with? Like, is it you, the cop, who pretty much has only played the cop for the past 8 years of his life?
Yeah.
Put some effort into it. You know, some effort into it is expanding who you are. Like, I don't want to say, you could speak to this more. You're a drama graduate.
You're going to say drama queen. It's okay.
No. Whatever. I didn't know the word. Drama, whatever.
Well, I mean, he did the Black Widow movie. He played the Red Cyclone or whatever.
Because when I saw Vincent D'Onofrio in The Cell with Jennifer Lopez, I was like, well, this isn't different than what he does on Law & Order. But then I saw him in Men in Black. Genius. The guy was genius.
He's great in Daredevil, and he was great in Full Metal Jacket. He's
right.
Yeah,
he's so, very, you know. So like, I just felt like, what's his name, McCovey? I just felt like his, and I don't know. I'm not being fair because I don't know how voice acting works. They could just be like, you know, they could just be directing John H. Benjamin, who just has the same voice for every.
I think it's a little panache, John.
Okay, well, how about this? That's the same voice, John.
Yeah. I think it is a directing issue because, I mean, the fact that you've got such wildly inconsistent performances from the voice cast.
Right.
Like, shows like they weren't really thinking this through.
Yeah.
The other thing that I felt was like annoying was that this game was like, I mean, the combat was very clumsy. Like, you would just empty a clip into like a moss monster, and you're like, what, does this thing have a weak spot? What's the deal? And then like there was a thing where like I just got stuck in the stairwell, and I'm just like, I was like, no, I am not redoing any of this. I kept trying to like dash my way out and everything.
That was my ugly. My bad was the puzzle heaviness and not knowing where to go. You were just basically like on a honey to-do list. Like, you just got to do this to do this. You got to do this to do that.
Yes.
And you're just, like, running around the mansion doing these things like you were cleaning a house or doing things that your wife asked you to do. And that's what I did. That was my bad, was that it was just way too many puzzles and not enough story. Granted, maybe they didn't have enough story to go on, maybe. I don't know, but it just kind of like it felt. Yeah, it just felt like we'll just blow this game out with puzzles and nobody will know the difference.
I mean, it's really fun and atmospheric. I liked the tone of it. It kind of reminded me of Clue. I'll sort of leave it here. It's a game I would recommend. I would not pay full price for this.
Right.
If you are a fan of the franchise, you're going to enjoy it, but it's, you know, like I wrote down that it was like Alan Wake meets Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah.
Where, you know, where
just
there's a
poorly
lot
poorly put together. That's all.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the sum of its parts. But you know, and the map is really confusing. Like the mansion's
God. Yeah. It's like, wait, what floor am I on? Okay.
Yeah.
It just said I was in the observatory.
Yeah, I mean, this is a good game to determine if you have, like, a learning disability or not. Because you're going to be able to, like, wait, I don't understand this. And, like, someone else will be like, no, this means this, this means that. You're not paying attention. I'm like, no, I just don't understand the map. Because it's just like, all the colors mean these things. I'm like, what are those? What does it mean? Like, I don't know. I'm ranting.
If it was like, if purple was meant that I visited it, and the yellow meant that I already completed it. What does pink mean? Like, it was just, there was no legend for one of the colors. And I was like, okay. And that's when I just stopped. But we're in luck because we had the opportunity to not record my voice last week. We are mashing two episodes together. What else did we play?
We played another basic, like a remake of something, which was the remastered version of Ghostbusters the video game.
Yes. So my beloved Ghostbusters came out in 2009. Yeah, it was a video game. It came out in 2009 as like an action adventure game. It was on PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360. It also came out on the Wii, which is what I think I had it for, because I had, of course, I had the Proton Pack that you stuck the Wii controller into.
Oh, fun.
Because you wanted to look like an idiot in your living room playing Ghostbusters like you were 10. So, yeah. This is disappointment number two. I did not like this game.
Yeah, so let's back up a little bit. Obviously, if you've been listening to this show, Ghostbusters is like a very, very important property for Paul, and Paul did complain even a little bit about it last week about his disappointment with Frozen Empire, the new Ghostbusters film.
Yeah, so I saw Frozen Empire and I was like, what are we doing? Can we just stop? You know, you gotta know when to just be like, Grandpa, you can't do that anymore. No, you're not gonna recreate that feeling that you had when you filmed the first Ghostbusters. It doesn't matter if you invite Walter Peck back into the movie or the original library guy.
Yeah.
There wasn't enough in the movie. There wasn't enough like splash, because it's like the thing that made Ghostbusters so iconic was the fact that it was like it took on a whole new paranormal thing. You know, we see a ghost, we're going to take care of it and put it in a container. Like, those things didn't exist. This felt like, the Ghostbusters, they're still alive and they're still doing their thing. And it just, that's the way it felt. And it was like just a boring story. It was a very boring story. And I just was like, is this over yet?
Yeah.
And that's when I said to you, let's play the game. Let's play the remastered version, and not because somebody on Twitter said it was a hidden gem, but because I had saw Frozen Empire, and I was all for it.
So let's talk a little bit about the history of this game. So this game came out in 2009, and I remember I think I was either subscribed to GamePro magazine or Official PlayStation magazine, one of those.
Game Informer.
And and they did like a 6-page spread on this game. Because you had all the talent behind the scenes and in front of the cameras in this game. You know, Harold Ramis and Dan Aykroyd wrote the script for this game.
Yeah.
You know, when they were interviewed, they were like, officially, basically, this is Ghostbusters 3. This is the third Ghostbusters movie, and it's in a video game form. I'm trying to do Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah, no, that was pretty good. That was pretty good. I remember actually. Oh, go ahead, finish your thing because I had something.
And so there's a lot of excitement about it because they are, you know, kind of like what they did with Alone in the Dark. They're bringing all of the sort of the familiar properties from that series into this game. So you're in the firehouse,
right.
You know, you go to the hotel like in the first level and everything, and you get to check out all of the sights and sounds of your favorite memories.
Right.
And on top of that, this game came out before all of the Ghostbuster remakes. This was a period of time, and Paul, you'll remember this, where if you went to a Halloween party, this is such a weird piece of memory hole. But if you were in a Halloween party sometime between 1991 to 2009 and you dressed up as a Ghostbuster, you basically won the costume contest automatically. Every time, like, it was like, oh, four guys dressed up as the Ghostbusters? Well, they're the winners.
Yeah.
Because it was just so much goodwill that franchise had created.
It was so unique. It was such a unique script, and it was such a unique story that, I mean, they just felt like they had to add. Now, granted, when I saw Afterlife, I was skeptical. And after I saw it, I was like, okay. They continued it. It was Ghostbusters 3. They did a better than good job at recreating that. And they got Hal Ramis in there as the ghost. And they got the quips from Bill Murray, you know, and they got everything in it. And I was like, oh, okay, so that's it. I wasn't crazy about it. It was just whatever. Like, it's hard for me to judge because of what special meaning it has to me.
Yeah.
The original, at least. And so it's hard for me to comment on what I thought Afterlife was going to be like, but it was good. I thought it was good and it was the end. But when they came out with Frozen Empire, it was like, it felt like they didn't need to. Like, it was a story they didn't need to tell, you know?
Yeah.
it was, and that's how I felt about this game. This game was a recreation of the original game that was stupid. It just. The original game was so stupid. It just didn't mesh. And I know they're trying to get you to be a Ghostbuster. Like, that's the whole idea. We're going to involve people in the game and make them new recruits. You know, like Spider-Man. You know, like everybody has a Spider-Man suit. You know?
Yeah.
Miles Morales, everybody. Mm-hmm. But it just doesn't work. The controls suck. I played it on the Switch. What'd you play it on?
I played it on my trusty PC.
Okay. The controls sucked. You felt like, and I don't know if this was intentional, but you felt like you were really controlling a proton power pack when you fired
it. Yes. They definitely got the cumbersome nature of the proton pack.
Because you were like all over the place with this thing. And you're like, okay, I just need to know how to aim and whatever. I played single player. I didn't play online. I definitely didn't play with somebody else. So the other Ghostbusters could come and touch you if you died and revive you.
Yeah.
I got up to the second boss, which was the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. And I was like, shouldn't he be the
later?
Last one? Like, the first one was like a Davy Jones sea captain that he just that everything was water. And you were just trudging through the Cedric Hotel, just whoosh, 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 like everywhere you went because it was flooded with water. Stupid quips from Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis. And which, by the way, whoever did the voice for him, spot on. I mean,
I think it was Harold Ramis.
Was it?
Yes, it was 2009.
Oh, that's right. They just remade it.
they tacked on, I don't know if you saw this in your version, but like they tacked on a In Loving Memory of Harold Ramis before the game starts, and it was like in a different font, and it was kind of just like inserted. And I was like, oh, that was awkward.
Where in there can you put in In Memoriam? You know, like they did the In Memoriam, but he died right before the Oscars. I don't know if you ever saw that one.
No.
And Bill Murray was doing the presentation, and when they did the whole We're Remembering thing on the Oscars, at the end, when they ended it, Bill Murray was like, oh, and writer-director Harold Ramis. He actually verbalized it.
Yeah.
Because he was annoyed that they couldn't put it in.
Yeah. I lost my thought.
The game.
The game is...
hard.
Yeah, the game isn't great.
It's not.
You could argue that it's a product of 2009.
Yeah.
But it has this... like it's definitely overstuffed in the way it just like it throws a lot of tutorial at you. It has all the hallmarks of a game that is from over 10 years ago.
Yeah, that's true too. And yeah. If I heard from another Ghostbuster again, hey, I'm on your team because you can't control, or we need to not cross the streams because you can't wield this proton pack. You have no choice but to run around the room and attack this wieldy ghost with your other co-players that they're constantly telling you, hey, I'm on your team, or don't cross the, you know, and you're like, yeah, I know, I get it. Yeah. But what do you want me to do? You want me to get the ghost, or do you want me to avoid you?
It's wildly chaotic. It made me honestly miss Luigi's Mansion, which essentially is this game, but better.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, with another game, I forgot which one, but I said, I don't think people understand what